You've reached the Holiday Helpline. We turn the holidays into holidays.
Hi, I want to surprise my wife and kids with some super stylish gifts.
Surprise! With all the velvet and sparkly styles you'll find at Old Navy, it's your time to shine.
Old Navy?
Yep, the entire store is up to 60% off right now.
Up to 60% off?
And women's dresses start at just $15, 12 for girls, with tops from $6 for adults, 5 for kids at Old Navy and OldNavy.com.
No surprise here. I'm going to Old Navy.
Turn your holiday into a holiday. Get to Old Navy today. Valid 12/6 to 12/12. Excludes in-store clearance, gift cards, register lane, items today only, and two-day only deals.
Not the house of cards that falls down easily. I'm strong enough to handle what you throw at me.
Mental Health News Radio, produced by MHNRnetwork.com, your source for information about our favorite subject, mental health. This show is brought to you by our incredible sponsors like ZenCharts.com, the intelligent EHR for addiction treatment organizations, and MyGenetics, that's MyGenetx.com, changing the way people are diagnosed and treated around the world, helping you better understand what makes you well. Don't you want information about yourself that empowers your mental health treatment? Also, who is minding the store, the finances of your behavioral health organization? TriadicLLC.com, that's TriadicLLC.com, is a full-service revenue cycle management and billing company focused on all the ins and outs of mental health billing. Our sponsors help keep this show on the air and advocating for everyone affected by mental health. Guess who that is? Everyone in the world. Take a listen to our show all the way to the end. You don't want to miss Miles the Therapy Dog. Special goodbye. Hey everyone, Kristen Sinanta Walker here with Mental Health News Radio, and I have a wonderful guest who, of course, has become a friend. She's fantastic. Randy Fine is here. Randy, thank you. First off, before I tell new listeners who you are, since all of our regular listeners already know, Randy, thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you, Kristen. It's such a pleasure to be back with you. So wonderful. I love your show.
Thank you. And same with me loving your show. And now you've got a new book out. So I'm going to read a little bit about your bio for any of those new listeners that are tuning in. Randy is a narcissistic personality disorder abuse expert. She has a radio show. She's an author and she's a life issues counselor living in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Through her wealth of experience, insight, and wisdom, she offers hope, compassion, and healing to others. Her groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, The Narcissistic Abuse Survivor's Guide to Healing and Recovery. She's going to help even more people. And Randy, isn't that the book that our good friend Andrea Schneider wrote a piece of, or a foreword?
Andrea Schneider wrote the foreword to the book, yes. So when I was writing the manuscript, I sent it to Andrea to see how she felt about it.
Fantastic.
And she absolutely loved it. And she said, this is going to help so many people, not only victims and survivors, but therapists, which I was really happy to hear. Because it does give the whole picture and teaches them how to treat people.
Yeah. And I mean, Andrea is one of my closest, you couldn't have a closer friend. We've had a couple people try to split us, probably out of pathological envy, and we both kind of looked at each other and laughed. That's like throwing a pebble at a steel building. It just ain't gonna happen.
Well, she wrote such a beautiful foreword to this book. I just couldn't have asked for anything more perfect.
Yeah, she's wonderful. She's writing a chapter in a book I'm doing too. So, well, let me finish
awesome.
Here. You have a blog called Love Your Life, and it's read in over 180 countries around the globe.
Yes.
And your talk show, your blog talk radio show, A Fine Time for Healing, A Sanctuary for Your Emotional Well-Being, is exceedingly popular. I don't listen to a lot of podcasts. I know, horrible shame on me, but we produce so many now on my network that I literally don't have time to listen to that many. I listen to snippets of the podcasters on my network, but I listen to yours. So
do you? Thank you so much.
Yeah,
that's
need
so
it.
Good to hear.
And your specialty really is dealing with narcissism in families, mostly having a narcissistic mother. So that's of particular interest to a lot of our listeners, including me. So tell me, you know, the impetus for this new book and just kind of the journey of getting that going?
I decided to write this book because I have heard from people I counsel, from thousands of people who write letters to me, follow me, things like that, listen to my shows, from the questions and the things that they wanted to know, the problems that they were having. That's really the impetus for writing this book. But the other thing is that I counsel people all over the world, really every corner of the world. And when I get off the phone with the counseling, I feel as if I wish I were in their pocket. Because what I know about people going through this pain is that I can say all these things and get them to a place of feeling much better. But because of things like cognitive dissonance and all the confusion and the neuropathways that have been formed in their brain, once our connection is broken, they often fall backwards. So this book is written to hold their hand, to put me in their pocket. It's a support and it's information. But in the book, I talk about, of course, first I talk about what this is. But I have done so much research into this topic, and there's things in this book that you won't find anywhere else because I've looked into the neuropsychology of it. I talk about the empathic sensitivity that happens to victims. I talk about just all the casualties, the ways that it affects us in life. But I also talk about every single kind of relationship you can imagine with a narcissist. I tell you what they look like. I give you case histories. And then I tell you how to deal with all this.
Right. I mean, you know, when you figure out that it's, you know, someone near and dear to you, that is a huge blow. It is a completely life. I mean, yes, it's a huge blow when it's, you know, someone that you think you're in love with and that's your life partner and so on. But I think, you know, when you find out it's a parent, that is, I don't know how much deeper of a blow you can kind of go from there. That rocks you all the way back to childhood.
It does, because, you know, the analogy that I like to use is, you know, when you're creating a building, you build a foundation. And based on the strength of that foundation, that's how that building is going to last. When you have been raised by narcissistic parents or grown up in a family with this kind of dynamic, you have a very fragile foundation. And when you find out all the things that you have endured, it's very hard to believe it, because we just assume parents love us.
Right.
We assume that all parents have the capacity to love their children. It seems to be a given. But when you're talking about narcissistic personality disorder, it is not a given. And that blows our mind. We have no frame of reference to accept that.
No, we don't. They're exactly. You feel like an orphan.
Yes.
When you finally figure it out, you're like, okay, I'm an orphan now. Have always been.
Yeah.
But now that this awareness is there, that's what you feel like. And no matter what you say, no matter how much well read you are about all of this, they certainly aren't going to believe you. You're going to become part of the discarded crew of other people that either they've discarded or have discarded them over the years.
Exactly.
So you know what happens to you now that you have this awareness, if you choose to say something about it.
Absolutely. And, you know, I am a survivor of childhood narcissistic abuse. And what's interesting is I was the golden child. And people have a huge misconception that the golden child is the one who doesn't get damaged. But I can tell you that the golden child suffers tremendously. And it may not appear so in the childhood, but their life is so destroyed from it because they spend their life as an object. And they never develop an inside. They never develop self-love. They never feel worthwhile because everything is about what they can do for others. And how their appearance can please and attract others. And the parent uses them for that. So I had a very, very hard time with my self-image, my self-esteem. I just had very difficult relationships. I didn't know what love was. And so, you know, I just want to quell that misconception. It is not true. Every role in the narcissistic family, every child role that is assigned by the narcissistic parent, they all are damaged in different ways, but equally as horrific.
Right. How do you talk to people that, you know, they're just figuring this out, you know, as an adult, and there's this, you know, obviously the narcissistic parent has no sense of their own self either, and neither do you. And yet you're not, you haven't followed, you know, that path to that, that pathology, but that same, you know, erosion or lack of a sense of self is there. So what is the difference between those two when you're talking about an empathic child that's become an adult and then their narcissistic parent, neither having that sense of who they really are?
Okay. Well, let me explain why we become empathic. And the reason is that when you live in an environment that is emotionally unpredictable, mm-hmm. you become hyper aware to what's everything around you, and you learn to be very tuned into energy because you can feel when something is about to happen. You become conditioned that way. And that's where our empathic sensitivity comes from as adults. We are very tuned into energy. We learn it as a survival mechanism in childhood. So the question that you're asking me is how we, what the first step is to dealing with this, mm-hmm. to dealing with, you know, the feelings of reality that your parent is a narcissist. Is that really what you're asking me?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's very hard to accept this reality because, like I said, we have no frame of reference. But also the narcissistic mind is a very different one. It doesn't function the way we function. So our mind keeps going back to what we think it should be rather than what we think it is. And the first thing that I do with people is I validate and support. Because when you've been treated this way, victimized this way, you have never been validated for your personal truth. Your experience has never been validated, and no one will. Not the perpetrator, not your other family members, not your friends, not your relatives. Nowhere you go will you get that validation.
Right.
And that is what hurts so bad. So the first thing I do is I listen and I determine if it truly is a narcissistic situation.
Mm.
And if so, you know, I never take anybody's word for it because, you know, people do a lot of reading. There's a lot of information out there on the web, and people do a lot of information and they come to me, read a lot of information and they come to me, with thinking that they might. Most of the time they don't want to believe it's true.
Right.
But the first thing I do is I evaluate the situation and I, ask a lot of questions to make sure I know what I'm dealing with. Once I know that it is someone that they are dealing with, a parent with NPD, then I explain to them what their childhood really was. I give them a dose of reality. It's almost a shock, but it wakes them up. And it's so interesting because as I do this, memories come flooding back into their mind. And I hear, oh yeah, I remember this and I remember this. And all of a sudden, it all pops up to the surface and they can see it. And then I validate them and I let them know, you were a victim. You had nothing to do with this, and this had nothing to do with you. It's no different than a criminal victimization. You are completely innocent in this, but we feel guilty.
Yeah.
And why do we feel guilty? Because we are taught that. That is the way, one of the ways in which we are manipulated. Children are very susceptible to guilt. So we're taught to feel guilty, and we're taught that everything's our responsibility. And not only that, the narcissist tells us it's all our fault. Everything is our fault. So they use this projection,
and their
it's
word,
very important.
Their word is law.
Their word is law, absolutely. Not only do they think it's law, we think it's law because mm-hmm. we have a overblown view of who they are. You know, it's the analogy of the Wizard of Oz. You know, I'm sure you've heard it and it's yep. come into play, but this is what we see. We see the great, powerful Oz on the screen when in fact it's nothing but a small, meek person moving the things to make it happen
right.
behind the curtains. But it's really hard for us to see this person as anything but all great and powerful. And they have also, from the time we're born, they've systematically broken down our ability to be an individual and to function as one. And they do this because we are guaranteed supply. Narcissistic parents have children for very different reasons. They don't have children because they want to love children and watch them grow and blossom and take on life and just sit there in awe of this person. No, they have children because they want to grow their own narcissistic supply. Mm-hmm. Children are guaranteed narcissistic supply. That's it. And what happens is, powerful.
Yeah, it's a hard
what happens
to
is,
swallow.
Yeah, it's very, very hard to swallow because we want to think it's about love. It never has been. Because narcissists, if we know anything about them, we know that they do not have the capacity to love. And that all starts once the narcissist personality disorder forms in them and they build a false self around them, they become incapable of a few things. One of them is they are incapable of love. They are incapable of empathy. And they are incapable for feeling happiness or any kind of self-satisfaction on their own. So from that point on, everything must come externally.
From other people.
And from other people, other sources. And it's to the degree of heroin addiction. It's to that degree. No sooner do they have the supply, they need it again. And in the same way that addiction is, they must have several sources. Because one source may not be enough. What if the person doesn't have the heroin? They have to know they have other sources.
Absolutely exhausted because of this person's behavior. I've watched, people go, this is what happened. I mean, I've done everything that you want. I've been a pack mule for you, and now that we're bound together, in some sort of work relationship or a marital relationship, all of a sudden the nastiness comes out from the narcissist, and they're just like, what happened?
What happened? Right.
And it's
our tendency, right.
It's horrifying to watch that. You, of course, dealt with it your entire childhood with this person, but new people that come in, you know what's going on because you know that the narcissist cannot be alone. They cannot sit with just themselves. They are miserable, freaked out. It's just an impossibility to be by
right.
themselves because they're
right.
absolutely miserable.
It's so true. You know, and I have many, many clients will say to me, but that's not true, Randy, because they're often by themselves. Well, there's a couple of reasons that it appears that way. Sometimes they are by themselves, but they're getting their fix online.
Right.
They are chatting it up with other people. But usually they have quite a society around them working in their behalf that we don't even know about, and they don't let us know about it because they want us to think that they're hurting and they're lonely. But narcissists are never lonely. They cannot possibly be. They would shrivel up and die if they were lonely. My mother, my mother's a perfect example because my mother, she's 89 years old. She is riddled with rheumatoid arthritis. Her joints are totally deformed. She's in constant agony. Her neck is, she has no discs in her neck. It's bone upon bone upon bone. The doctor told her if she falls, she will be paralyzed. She can't see. She broke her right arm and she can't even use it. Okay. This is a woman who should be in a wheelchair and pretty much not get out of bed. She should be an invalid. My mother will not sit in the wheelchair and she goes out every single day, every day. My father is still alive. He's very old. He's in his 90s. She holds on to him. And when we talk to her about that, I really don't have a relationship anymore with her, but, you know, I know my sisters do. She says, I'm fine. I have your father. She is in such denial. But if she's at home, she can't get supply. Right. So she goes to the grocery store and she smiles at everybody. She's this pitiful little old lady. Everyone smiles at her. They must get it somewhere.
Now, talk to us about the difference between, you know, of course, we're human beings and we receive empathy and you know, feelings and wonderful things in community with other people. What is the difference between someone who does that and someone who is going out to gather supply?
Okay. So narcissists, every waking moment is about getting narcissistic supply, which is adoration, admiration, and attention. And like I said, that is a drug, and it is a type of addiction. When they relate to people, they're not relating to them in a relationship mode, because a relationship mode is give and take. So in any other interaction that you have, so you and I, let's call us normal, mm-hmm. if you will. when we meet somebody and we start talking to them, we're interested in who that person is, what they have to say.
Right.
We're looking at them and we're thinking, you know, how does this relate to us? Is this somebody I could continue to have in my life? Or I'm just really interested to hear their perspective on things. Narcissists don't do that because they can't have relationships. It's impossible. They give zero and the other person gives 100%. There's no other way. So when they're going out, they're not looking within anyone. They objectify everyone. They objectify and dehumanize people. So they see them as things. Things that are there for their use or abuse.
Mm.
And they choose. If they treat them well, it's because they will get something out of that. If they abuse them, it's because they will get something out of that. It doesn't matter to a narcissist what kind of attention they get. Negative, positive, doesn't matter. Anything feeds them. So that's really the main difference, is they are not seeking people for who they are. They're seeking people for what they can take from them.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah. After, I don't know how many shows you've done. Yeah. You, I think your show, when, what year did you start your podcast?
Oh my gosh. It's been going on for 6 years. So okay. Probably 2011.
Okay. Yeah. Mine's 4 years. So yeah, you've done as many, if not more, interviews than I have. And, you know, in order to do this, and I'm not saying there aren't plenty of narcissists to do podcasts, because obviously there are, but in order to do, I think, what the kind of things that we talk about, you have to be a really good listener and an active listener and tap into someone's empathy in order to get into the kind of topics that we do. It's been a great practice for me in learning how to listen. And then I have my shows that I do that are shows within shows where I get to talk. And that helps because sometimes, you know, all this knowledge gets packed in from all these wonderful experts that we talk to.
Yeah.
And then sometimes I have to talk about what I've been learning.
But yeah. I know.
It's been really good to, you know, learn those active listening skills, but it's also interesting to pick up on, you know, when you're tapping into that energetic, emotional reservoir within another person and making a connection, and it does fill you up and it feels wonderful when it's two highly empathic people having an exchange.
Oh, it's amazing. The energy is amazing. And it does, it sort of takes you out of your own body. And puts you in a different realm almost. Yes. Yeah. It's a wonderful feeling. Narcissists never, ever, ever have that feeling. Never. They can't look at a flower and get happy. There's no beauty that makes them happy. Everything has to be external. They don't have the mechanism inside to create happiness, which is why they destroy ours.
Oh, yeah. And there's no cure, from what I can see, to this, because they don't believe that there would be a complete shatter. That's death to them. They would have to die from that life in order to do the hard work it takes to build the ability to sit and be with themselves and be happy.
Right. Two things happen. Well, actually, three things happen when a narcissist goes, they never will submit themselves to therapy, but if they're forced, well, you know, if their marriage is falling apart or something like that, if they're coerced into going, they will either call the therapist a quack, say they don't know what they're talking about, or they will manipulate them into believing their lies. So narcissists cannot get better. They cannot get better. And it's not because there's anything in their brain that prevents them from getting better. It is their perception. It's the perception of the false self. The false self is there. They build this from the time they're children. It's there to tell them lies. And so you never are exposed to the true inside person, the true self. The false self just tells them lies. So nothing permeates that. Nothing. It doesn't matter how skilled a therapist is or how much they have to lose. It doesn't matter. It cannot penetrate. It's steel. It doesn't get through.
No. And I have known a few that have gone to therapy, even therapy for years, but the thought of you going to therapy with them is absolute abject fear on their part, because you're going to go there and talk about, well, this is how they really behave, the raging,
yes,
the temper tantrum coming out of someone who's well beyond the years that you would behave like a 3-year-old, the manipulating, the all of that. And that none of that is what gets shared with the therapist. The therapist has a glowing review of their patient, if they're somewhat easily fooled. Because how would a therapist know what really goes on?
You know, I had a very interesting, these narcissists are, their ability to manipulate is seamless, imperceptible, yeah, almost. And, I have a client who had been telling me, she's been my client for a couple of years. She's been telling me about her ex-husband for a long time. And he has done horrific things. And nothing the man ever says is true. He lives in a fantasy world. Well, anyway, she sent me a video of him being interviewed on a show. And the interviewer, and this was actually a video, so it wasn't just audio. And the interviewer was quite taken with him because of the glowing things that he thought this guy had done. And you would think he had contacts with Deepak Chopra, and the things he threw out there were unbelievable. And he talked for an hour, and I was mesmerized. And I thought to myself, oh my gosh, if I didn't know, I would believe every word he said. So it doesn't matter how in tuned we are,
right,
to this. They are amazing. They're brilliant in their ability to do this.
What are the after effects or the effects that this crazy making is for victims of, especially children of narcissistic parents? If you have a mother and a father, they both are, and the chances that you're going to become one are pretty darn high, or at least you're going to carry some of those fleas with you as an adult and try to wind your way through that. But what are some of the signs of your behavior, a victim's behavior, just for our listeners are always looking, what is it I'm doing that displays how I've been raised or how I've been treated that can tell me that I'm a victim of this?
Okay. So what happens, this is really where traditional therapy, in many cases, unless they're outside of the box thinkers, this is really where they lack and where this problem is. Because we develop something called narcissistic victim syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And narcissistic victim syndrome is comprised of many things. It's comprised of dissociation, infantile regression, Stockholm syndrome or trauma bonding, cognitive dissonance, magical thinking, PTSD and complex PTSD. These are all part of the narcissistic victim syndrome. And I get many people who will call me and say, or write to me and say, before we get into it, I just have to tell you, I think I'm a narcissist.
Yeah. Well, I've been
and I
there
say
too.
To them, well, you know, right. Well, tell me, have you ever apologized for anything you've ever done? Oh my gosh. I apologize even when I didn't do it. And
yeah.
I say, then you're not a narcissist, because narcissists never apologize. But a lot of times, as victims, we're very angry. We have a lot packed down inside of us. And we lash out. And we have hair trigger reactions. So sometimes we're not so nice. Often we isolate. So we think we can't deal with people. We can't be around people. We can't get along with people.
Right.
What are some of the things?
I think one I've noticed for me is having one narcissistic person after another in my life, male and female, after the other, where sometimes I hear, you know, I'm doing my own show and I've interviewed everybody and, you know, you'll hear some people come on and they had that one relationship with a narcissist that really brought them to their knees. And I'm like, you've only had one? I have been having them.
You are so right.
My whole life.
That is such a good point. Right.
Until now, until this last, like, you know, I mean, every so often somebody creeps in and I'm like, I recognize it and it's out. But if that's how you were raised and this is what you were surrounded by, that's your normal.
It is your normal. And we learned really well from our perpetrators, from our parents or whatever. Children who are manipulated learn how to manipulate. They have to.
Right.
So that's another thing that confuses us, because we can pretty much manipulate however we want things to go for us.
Right.
And that seems selfish. Yeah. The other thing is, but one of the things that really is kind of, this is very common, is that we have no self-love when we come from these environments, but we're afraid of self-love because we think self-love is selfish.
Right.
Because we've seen selfishness at its absolute worst, and we never want to be that way.
Yeah.
And if we haven't become narcissists, we've become pleasers, because that's the other way that we have gotten through this very, very emotionally challenging childhood. Our subconscious has to take over. It's got to do something or we'd go insane. So we're either a pleaser or we're a perpetrator. That's generally what happens. And when we're a pleaser, we learn that nothing is about us. It's always about everyone else.
Right.
And we learn to always take the focus off of us and put it on someone else. And I know I did this for years. People would say, how you doing? And I'd say, no, how are you doing? And then I wouldn't have to share, and I'd get them to tell me how they were doing. And then I would help them. I'd give them insight. But we learn that it's selfish to care for ourselves. And that is so such a misconception. Because if we don't develop self-love and we don't put ourselves first in every single thing we do in life, we will fall victim to this over and over and over again. And that is the key right there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I noticed this recently that you're right. That is the key. But I have this new mantra. My self-worth doesn't need to be derived from how much I'm giving to others. My value is dependent on the fact that I'm just me.
Yes.
And that was a huge concept for me. I mean, because, man, I can give and give and do and do and do and do. And it stopped being this, I want everyone to love me, because it never really, that was never the thing for me. It was more, I'm not worthy of anything. And so I better do nice things for people because I'm such an awful person inside that I just better do nice things. So it was never that, oh, I've got to do it to prove something to other people how wonderful I am. That seems to be more on the narcissistic side. I didn't do it to get supply. It was just because I just thought, well, I better, because I'm so awful that I've got to just, I've just got to do some nice things. And, you know, that subsides. You do a lot of therapy and you get to a point where now it's like, no, just because I exist, I'm okay. I'm cool. I don't have to be doing 1,000 great, nice things for people to be valuable. That was a big turning point for me.
That's huge. And I'm so glad that you've come to that, you know, because that is so true. You know, this is from a broad spiritual point of view, not a religious one, but it is said, you know, and I do a lot of spiritual reading and things like that, and just connection with the other side and those kind of things. But, and I guess that comes from my empathic sensitivity, but
right.
they say, it is said that only the bravest souls come to Earth School. There are people, and if you believe in life after life and things like that, and that we come back or we have several lives and we exist as a soul, that kind of thing. There are souls who live one life and never come back because it is so horrible. They don't want to do it. So only the bravest souls come to Earth School. So the fact that we're here means that we can do it. And often we take on challenges when we are souls and living in bliss that we can't even imagine would be so horrific, because we want to come here and we want to grow and we take on a lot.
Yes.
Some of us take on too much, and it's a very painful life, but it's all about growth. And, we wouldn't be here if we weren't important. The fact that we're here, just the fact that we're here, means there's something we are here to do. We have a purpose. We're very, very, each and every one of us are very important here in the whole scheme, the whole plan of things. Every one of us.
Right. It, when you look at things that way, which I do as well, it changes. It makes the mundane that we get up so upset about, just like, it's okay to still get upset about those things. Life can be irritating, but it takes away some of the sting of it. You don't sit in that and rage against that, because you have this much bigger perspective about what the heck this is really about. I always say that too. You know, we didn't come here to muck about. This is a warrior's journey when you come into this, you know, into this experience.
So right. And that's right.
You know, as I've gotten older, I have younger, you know, podcasters that come on and do their own podcasts on my network and so on, and they're going through it, and I just sit back and tell them, yeah, you know, it's just, think about how many mini revolutions you're trying to start out there and why you're doing that. Like, what's the purpose of that? Is that something really that you need to learn, or are you just looking for a fight? Because some of that stuff you can really just let go of. It's
That's
not
true.
It's a distraction, and it's not worth the upsetness.
It's true. You do learn to pick your battles as you get older. If you don't, it's pretty sad. It's pretty sad. If you don't, there's usually something that's blocking that's not allowing you to do that. But that's great advice. That's a great thing to tell people.
Yeah. And I think I noticed, you know, with someone who has operated for, you know, narcissism obviously is on a spectrum, but someone who's operated that way for quite some time, and they get older and they've decided that they're done. They're not going to fight their pathology anymore. That's it, because of their age or whatever it is. This is the way it's going to be. They're done. And world, just deal with it. There's not going to be any more growth beyond this point. That's very, very sad. I know some people that were, you know, 50 years older than they really were, you know, when they were 20, and not in the way of an old soul, just like that's just the stubbornness of not wanting to grow. And I guess what fascinates me now is, you know, what does someone do when they find out, okay, my parent or parents are narcissists, I've dealt with all of this crap, the relationship is not going to ever get to a healthy place because you now have this awareness and you're not going to play that game anymore. It's literally like you are newborn, you're out in the wilderness by yourself. What do you say to people, you know, starting that journey, whatever age that they're at? Because it's scary.
It's very scary. And when you're first realizing that, that's a time of great vulnerability and a time where you need tremendous validation and support. And that really is, you know, my book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, this book takes you through that entire process. It helps you to see things from a different point of view. It helps you to see things from the correct point of view. It helps you to see things from a different point of view. But it also gives you tools for getting past that. And I even talk about in the book how to deal. You know, I talk about contact, no contact, that kind of thing. But I even have a chapter specifically for dealing with parents who you've discovered this about. Because we don't, it's just not acceptable in society to give up your parents.
Mm-hmm.
And so that puts us in such a confused state and we feel so guilty. And we feel so bad, and everyone tells us how bad we are, you know,
oh,
that we can't
absolutely.
Deal with
it. It's your mother, could you? Oh, yeah.
Your mother. But there's a chapter in this book about honoring the dishonorable. Because we need to find something, some way to be grateful to this person. And often there's very little. But, you know, I dedicated one of the dedications in my book was to my mother, and I'm going to read it to you.
Okay.
And this came after a very, very long thought out process because I realized I wouldn't do what I do had I not learned from her. So I wrote, in addition to the first dedication, I also dedicate this book with immense gratitude to my mother who brought me into this world and endowed me with the lifelong lessons that enabled me to help so many others. Without her and the challenges she presented to me, this book would not have been possible. For that, I honor you and thank you, Mom. Now, you know, reading that, one might think that I have a relationship with my mother. I don't. But I have to find some kind of gratitude in that. And that's how we get to forgiveness. But back to your question about the first time you come to feeling this, because it is so very devastating. It is so devastating. Because of the cognitive dissonance, which I'm sure you've talked about lots and lots on your show, this disagreement of thought that goes on, we tend, and this is something actually, I'll tell you something that I learned recently, which is really, really fascinating to me. When we have a happy memory, a good memory, our brain stores that intact as one experience because it has kicked off endorphins, and we store it as one complete experience. When we suffer trauma and abuse, our brain can't store that as one thought. So it fragments it into lots and lots of different thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
So when we go to think back, often we have a very hard time putting together an entire picture of what happened to us. It's much easier to remember the good things that the person did, and it's more difficult to put together your entire experience. But from the first time that I work with people, somehow this comes together. It all seems to gel, and they start spouting experiences that they hadn't remembered. So just the validation alone that you did not do this, that this was done to you. You are a victim, and you can claim that you are a victim. That does not mean you walk through life in a victimization mentality.
Right.
But you must first understand this is not about you, never was. You were targeted just as a criminal would target you if they wanted your wallet or purse. You were targeted and used. Yeah. And coming to terms, once those things start flooding back in the brain, it's very, very hard to go backwards. You will take steps backwards, but it's very hard to go completely back. And you start in your own self coming to terms with what you need to do. But it does take lots and lots of support and validation to get there.
It does. It does. And I mean, I look at it like, well, and some of my friends have said to me that have known things that I've been oblivious to, because we come to these awarenesses when we can handle them. And it's amazing, you know, who the kind of people that I'm surrounded by that say, oh, we've known this. We've known this, Kristen. We're waiting for you to be ready to know it. And that is to know that you have that validation around you is amazing. And the other things that, you know, they've said to me is, this is where your greatest healing comes from. But I want our listeners to hear that your greatest healing comes from what looks like you just landed in a horror movie.
Oh, wow. You are so right. And it's so hard to see it when you're feeling that way. You are so right. But there is, you know, things change and things get better. They just do. Life just has a way of taking us through processes. And, you know, when we heal from these things, we don't normally heal, or necessarily heal, I should say, from them in entirety.
Right.
We heal from them in stages.
Yes.
There's so much, especially with childhood abuse. It is packed so deep and the walls are so thick that it's very hard to get through. And I know for myself, I have completely healed from my narcissistic abuse and moved on, and I feel great and I'm fine. But in the last year, a piece came up, just one little piece that I couldn't deal with. I didn't know what it was about, but I know it was beginning to paralyze me. And I couldn't get in touch with it. No matter what I knew, no matter what I read, no matter how much I went within, I couldn't get to that place. It was the last piece. Mm-hmm. And I actually went to a hypnotherapist, and together we got it out. So I say this because there's always going to be a little piece. There's something that we're going to have to look at and work on. But right. We're not shown everything every time, because we just could not handle it.
We'd be flattened. Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
It's part of the journey. But yeah, that ability to finally let go of that false sense that everything's really okay is huge, because it isn't. And living in the reality that it isn't, it wasn't, and it's not going to be, gives you that stepping stone into, okay, now I really can take ownership of my healing, because I know what the truth is now. And that's very scary, but that's really the place you have to get to start on the path. And you're right, you know, there's a lot of unpacking. It can take years.
There is a lot of unpacking. You know, you were talking about that, you know, so I do a whole thing in the book about magical thinking and Pollyannaism.
Mm-hmm.
And what confuses us is, you know, ever since the book The Secret came out, everybody, we've been told that all we have to do is think something and it's so. That's not possible if you have pain and suffering that you've packed away. You can't think yourself out of it. You cannot possibly. But it makes people feel very inadequate when they can't do that.
Right.
So they go around saying, oh, I'm a very positive thinker. But meanwhile, underneath of it all, they're miserable.
Right.
So it is okay to think positive. But when there's an evidence that is contrary to that, that is delusional.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We did a show called Fantasy Island. it was the beginnings of this conversation I'm having with you. But, Randy, oh my gosh, as usual, I wish I could have you on every week, but I know you're a very busy woman. But thank you for coming on the show. Please tell our listeners, I know they can get your book on Amazon and Barnes and Noble and everywhere else that you can buy books, but tell them the full name of the book.
Okay, great. The book is called Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, The Narcissistic Abuse Survivor's Guide to Healing and Recovery, and I'm Randy G. Fine. And you can get this in paperback or Kindle on Amazon, but I want to tell you, if you go on my website, randygfine.com, first of all, you can click right through, but I have an offer on there for some free gifts for survivors. Mm-hmm. And so I urge you to go on my website, Randy, RANDIGFINE.com, and look at the gifts that I'm sending out to people. It's kind of fun. It's fun. It makes fun and it empowers us. So there you go.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad you and Andrea are our warrior sisters with all of us now too. And thank you, Randy, yes, for agreeing to come on my show.
It has been an absolute pleasure, Kristen, and I will come back anytime you'd like. I'm never too busy for you.
Thank you. Thank you, of course, to our listeners. We love you. Thank you for listening for the 4 years we've been on the air, and have a wonderful day. Thanks from Mental Health News Radio.
Get ready for it, because here it comes. But first, thank you again to our sponsors like EverythingEHR.com, devoted to helping organizations finding the best electronic health record in behavioral health, and Service Dogs by Warren Retrievers, SDWR.org, a nonprofit organization that provides service dogs to those with unique abilities and invisible diseases, to include autism, diabetes, epilepsy, and PTSD. Until there's a cure, there's a dog. And hey, an SDWR service dog is at work every day with one of our own team members. If you have a question, visit us at mentalhealthnewsradio.com or our network of podcasters at mhnrnetwork.com. Disruptors, healers, technologists, advocates, and most importantly, voices to be heard from all corners of the globe. Thank you so much for joining us.
And now a final word from our therapy dog, Miles.
Good boy.
Rush into Old Navy for gifts that go the distance, like Old Navy Active for the family. Today only, all Old Navy Active is 50% off. But hurry, it's just one day only today at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Valid 12/10, excludes in-store clearance and maternity. Rush into Old Navy for gifts that go the distance, like Old Navy Active for the family. Today only, all Old Navy Active is 50% off. But hurry, it's just one day only today at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Valid 12/10, excludes in-store clearance and maternity.